Welcome to the Photo Field Notes podcast, where you'll find stories, tips, and inspiration from professional photographers to get you taking action in your own business and making your business dreams a reality.
Hey, everybody. Today, I'm here with Taylor Petrinovich, and she leads Level Up Your Wedding Film Business and also Fleeting Moment Cinema. She is a videographer, not a photographer, but she still has some really interesting things to share. I think that you're going to find her story to be very relevant, whether you're a photographer, a videographer, or some form of both. So, Taylor, I think you know, I always like to start with the story, the backstory of how you got into wedding films in the first place, how this all got started for you, and how you grew your business to what it is today.
Yeah. Hi. Well, first off, thank you for having me on the podcast. I'm super excited to be here. I think as a lot of kind of wedding professionals, I didn't always like dream of being like a wedding videographer. It was not something that was on my radar. And I have kind of an interesting story. When my first daughter was close to being born, I started a YouTube channel. I was like obsessed with watching like motherhood and like pregnancy YouTube channels. So I started my own. I ended up growing that following to like 10,000-ish people, but I got really tired of that sort of content. Like it just felt really monotonous and I wasn't like super passionate about it anymore. But I knew that I needed to have some sort of project outside of motherhood to kind of keep my brain, you know, working. And my husband recommended that I start some sort of business that has to do with video. He said that I already had all the gear and everything. And so he like really strongly encouraged me to do that. So he actually bought me the book by Christy Wright, Business Boutique. She's like a Dave Ramsey personality.
Yep, I know her.
Yeah. So I read that book and I was like, okay, cool. I know exactly what I wanted to do. I wanted to do like family films, which turns out that's not really a thing. but I wanted to do like maternity shoots, but in video, you know, newborns, maybe like high school seniors. I had like kind of a vision for what I wanted to do. And I, you know, I made the Facebook page and like promoted it like to my, you know, friends and family or whatever. And a girl that I went to high school with, she reached out to me and said, I'm getting married next month. Can you do my wedding? And I was like, yeah, obviously. Like, I had no idea what that actually entailed. But I'm more of a say yes now and figure it out later kind of person. And so I said, yes, of course. I feel kind of bad. I probably shouldn't have charged her as much as I did. I charged her like $900 or something for like not knowing anything about it. But I, you know, just binged all the YouTube, listened to all the podcasts, and I shot that wedding, and I actually think that I did like a pretty okay job.
So don't you think, wouldn't you say that what you gave her was worth at least $900, if not more?
I would say so, especially since I think I did like 10 hours of coverage or something. So like if you like count all of my time, I mean, like I had like a pretty like good understanding of how video works too. So like I wasn't like a total like novice, but if I were to start my business again, I would do it for free. just to have it be like the lowest pressure possible.
So you were just really stressed basically. It was very stressful for you.
It was super stressful. Like you really don't know what you don't know until you know it. And so kind of I at least had the knowledge that you should run more than one camera, like for a ceremony. So I had two going, but like my audio totally sounded terrible. And I know that photographers probably can't relate much to that, but like video like runs on audio. Like that's the differentiator. So it's kind of a bummer. But anyway, I edited around it and she was super happy with it. She referred me to a bunch of people. And I decided to kind of change avenues and just hit the wedding thing full force. So I started, her wedding was in September, I think. And so I think I did like 5, 6, 7-ish weddings like that fall. And I did like somewhere like 22 maybe the following year and then 20. And then like this year I'm scaling it back a little bit just for like quality of life like issues. So I'm doing 14 this year, but yeah, just kind of never looked back.
Videography, it sounds like, and I get the feeling, it tends to not always book last minute, but you're a lot more likely to get that last minute booking where somebody realizes they have extra money and they really have been told, oh my gosh, get a videographer, you'll never regret it. So is that why? Like you did this one in September and, well, I guess, and you also have, you don't live in Michigan, I have to remember, because Michigan, like you're almost at the end of wedding season, but you still ended up booking that year.
Yeah.
Quite a few weddings.
Yeah, so it's definitely not a must, I don't think, yet, like as far as couples are concerned. I think that it is a huge regret for couples who don't get a videographer, though. I think that they, like hindsight's 2020, and they typically wish they would have gotten one. But yeah, unfortunately, we kind of get the leftover budget a lot of the times. And so for that reason, I think that photographers are able to like charge a little bit more easily. But I have kind of worked very intentionally on doing a few things in my business to make it a sustainable career for me, because shooting weddings for, you know, $1,000, $1,200 was not going to be very sustainable long term. So I had heard a tidbit from like a really well-known videographer to race to $5,000. Like that should be like where you want to get to as soon as you can, because 20 weddings is easy to shoot. Like, I think that's pretty tangible. And so that's $100,000 a year if you're charging 5,000. So,
yeah. So, and that's the topic that I really want to talk about, because whether it's videography or photography, raising prices is a really big, important topic that drives your balance in life. I think, you know, when we become parents, we really start to value those weekends. We don't want to necessarily, even if we theoretically could book 50 weddings at, you know, a lower amount, wouldn't we so much rather book less, like 10, yes, 20 at a higher rate and still make that income? Obviously, that's more desirable. But we also have to make sure that what we're delivering is worth that amount. So right, what did that look like for you? You started out, you said that originally you thought you should have charged nothing. It sounds like you're wrong and you actually totally delivered way more value than $900, but it doesn't matter.
Just for the pressure.
Yeah. So, when you kind of like, it sounds like you kind of went to like 1200 was where you were maybe that first fall. And then you were in this like race to 5,000. So what did that look like? Were you booking every time that you booked? Did you raise your prices? How did you?
That's exactly what I did.
Okay.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. How did you raise, like how much would you raise it each time?
So I started just kind of like testing the waters, and I would raise the prices by about $100 each time. And then that like people just kept booking like fast. So I started raising them by $200, $300, $400 each time, until it's like a month or so between each booking. And I feel like that I wanted to find like a price point that matched the amount of weddings that I want to book. Like I don't need, like you said, like 50 people to want to book me every year. I only need, you know, 10, 12, 14 people. And so like finding kind of that like balance was my goal. And I think that there's a few things that everyone should do before they start raising their prices. The first one is making sure that your quality is on par with your pricing, because it's not very honest like to charge like higher rates if like your quality doesn't match that rate. But beyond the quality of your work, I think that branding is kind of the next like biggest important thing. Because if like, let's say your logo looks like it was designed by like a 12-year-old, you know, like no one's going to trust you. It's like the idea of perceived value. The example I like to give people is like when like handbags, like you might buy a purse at Target and a purse from Louis Vuitton, and they do the same thing. They have the same amount of pockets. They're the same size, but you might throw the purse from Target in your closet at the end of the day, like on top of all your shoes, but like you're going to like very carefully put that Louis Vuitton bag like on the top shelf. And so you want to like give a sort of vibe to your clients that you're Louis Vuitton and that you're worth it, and that way they value you more and they will pay for that perceived value.
So what did you do besides obviously making sure your quality of work was there? Did you hire someone to help you with your branding and your website? How did you make yourself that desirable brand instead of just being like any old Target brand?
Yeah. So I changed my logo. Like when I first started, I think I went on like Fiverr or something and got like a super like generic logo. So I hired like an actual like graphic designer, and she designed my logo, and we worked together to create like a palette, like a color palette. I chose like a gold and white color palette because that just kind of seems high end in my mind. I'm sure that it could really work with like any colors, but to me, that's what seemed high end. And then I kind of worked on like stripping things down on my website, because I think that maybe beyond your Instagram page or something, your website is where like most people are going to like pay attention to. And so I like chose specifically the layout of my website to make sure that it seemed like there was no fluff like, I wanted it to be like very direct, but like polished. And I think that it's easy to get caught up in like adding everything in the kitchen sink on your website, but stripping it down to like the bare minimum and like being intentional with like the copy that you put on your website is a huge part of branding and like elevating it.
That's true, because I do make those quick judgments, you know, when I do love a videographer and I meet them in person first, then I'm like, oh, I should check out their work. I work with them and I want to check out their work. You know, I am, before I recommend them, I am going to go to their website. And if their website is cluttered or their logo is really crappy, you know, I like, their brand reflects my brand too. And so, and it's vice versa. You know, if you want to get recommended by other vendors, you want to, you know, you want to keep it up for both the client and the other vendors who are going to be kind of judging that. Okay. So raising it bit by bit totally makes sense. So there's also this psychological effect that we go through as photographers, as videographers, as we're raising our prices. And I want to talk about that, just kind of have a conversation about that from both my perspective and yours. There's this fear that happens that we say to ourselves, okay, I know I'm worth more. I know I need to charge more, but I'm looking around at the market and this person's really good and they charge less. Or the biggest fear, what if all of a sudden no one is booking me? What am I going to do? So how did you get past that hang up?
So for the first part, I think that we tend to underestimate like the way we insert ourselves into our business. We are going to attract someone, like I will attract someone that maybe you wouldn't be able to attract. Like someone's going to vibe with me that Timmy over there like isn't going to be able to vibe with. And I think that a lot that has to do with kind of that fear is just like being confident that like you have a tribe of people out there who would love your work and like will do anything to book you. So it's kind of confidence in that, knowing that you are unique. Everyone thinks they're not unique, but everyone is unique. And the second thing is just kind of knowing that you can just reduce your prices again. Like if you do get into kind of like a stall where maybe you're relying on those deposits to pay your mortgage or whatever, like it's okay to just lower them again a little bit for like a little bit of time and then bump them back up. Like it's just testing the market. It's just, yeah.
So what's your philosophy about sharing prices? Do you not share prices or starting at prices or anything on your website? You wait?
No, I do opposite. I am super transparent. I have everything about my pricing on my website, like readily available, and like all the add-ons and how much each of those things cost as well. Since you're a mom, you totally understand. I value my time a lot, and responding to email after email like gets really kind of frustrating when maybe only like a certain percentage is booking. And so I wanted to really reduce the amount of time I was spending in email, and being really transparent with potential clients is the way that I chose to do that. And people have responded really well. Sometimes people don't click through like to my investment page on my website, so I still have to like send them a link to that. But I really like full transparency, and I don't really even care if anyone in my area like copies what I'm doing, because like I said, like people aren't booking me because of what I offer, like specifically like in my package. They're booking me because of like me and my product that no one else can duplicate. And so that's totally fine with me.
Yeah. I'm also very transparent about my pricing. Well, okay. I guess what I do is I have a starting at price for like Saturday weddings. And then once they fill out the contact form, they automatically get a video of me, which you'd probably like this because you're like really good at video, but it's a video of me and I walk them through pricing. But I can walk them through the experience first and get them like, okay, that experience, just like you would have in like a sales meeting, but you're like, oh, that experience sounds really great. Oh, now here's what it costs. So it is transparent. And so anybody could technically have access to that. But one thing that my kind of thought on like raising prices or lowering prices. Yeah, it's one thing to just straight up say like this package is going to cost this much more, which we should be doing because cost of living is increasing anyway and we're getting better and we should be charging more. But the other thing that I've experimented with in the past is just changing the package. So one way that I at one point I was trying to like experiment with booking as many as I possibly could. And so one thing I did was hire associates, and I could charge less for associates, but then I was working less. And then with the associates, I started out, I think the minimum package was like 6 hours, so, or 5 hours even. So they could actually like get a pretty affordable rate, but it was only 5 hours of coverage, which allowed me to book more because I was offering smaller packages. Well, then I realized for me personally, I only wanted to do so many weddings a year. And so I didn't want to do 5-6 hour weddings anymore. So
yeah, that takes away a date that you could exactly. be booking a 12 hour day. Yeah.
Yeah. So now for me on Saturday weddings, I say the minimum package that you can book on a Saturday is a 7 hour package. So prices start at this because they include this. I guess if I ever wanted to like, quote, lower my prices, I wouldn't just lower my prices. I would reduce the package. So I would say, you can get in at this rate, but you're getting less. You can get 6 hours at this rate. So I do that like on Friday weddings, or if it's a Sunday wedding in a weekend when I'm already in town because I'm doing a Saturday wedding, I'll get a little bit more flexible where I'll say, okay, I'll do like, if you only need 4 hours of coverage and it's a Friday, sure, I'll give you this like custom smaller package to do that, because it's harder to book a Friday than it is to book a Saturday. So that's something to consider if you're in a spot where you're trying to reduce the price of your packages. Don't necessarily just like start slashing prices. Maybe think about what you can cut as a service first, whether it's coverage hours, or I know, you know, there's just different offerings.
Like albums, having an a la carte.
Yeah, and that's the thing. So I live in an area where the budgets, you know, I've realized now, like, people will spend it if they value it, but my traditional thought was like, oh, you know, budgets around here. Like, when I charged, whatever, $2,500, I thought, no one will spend more than $2,500. Well, it turned out that wasn't true. But a couple things that I do are, I offer a package with no second shooter. I offer packages that don't have an album included. They can buy that later, a la carte. Like, think of it a year later when they decide they have the money for it. Because some photographers or videographers might say like, no, we have to include this in every package, but that's not true. We might just have to offer yourself as a single shooter at a slightly less rate to make it work in that market. But then it's all about, we can't get caught up in the ego of what we're charging. We need to think about profit. So yeah, yes, I'm charging this much, but I'm paying for an album. I'm paying for a second photographer, and that's cutting into my profit. We need to think about, even if I'm charging less, but I'm paying less, my profit is what matters. So I think too many of us are stuck in our own heads.
That's a great point. That's a great point. Especially like, I don't know if it's the same with photographers, but with videographers, like doing destinations and like elopements is like a huge thing. Like, it's very, very popular. And so I see a lot of people like maybe talking in forums about like, oh, I charge, you know, maybe, I don't know, $7,000. But I'm like, well, I know very well that you had to spend $2,000 on flights and like airfare, like, and hotel stays and all these things. So it's like, well, my $4,200 local wedding shot by myself, I'm making more than you are like with that fancy $7,000 wedding. So that's such a great point. And I did something really similar with stripping things down. I know that like photography and videography are very different because there's so many different types of deliverables when it comes to video. But I did something really similar when I was in that like 2000, 2500, range, where I just did like a highlight film, just myself for 8 hours. And, the amount of upsells though, like later is like huge. Like people decide later that yes, of course I want a ceremony or the speeches or whatever it is. So I'm sure that that can be like translated to photography, like products.
That's such a good point. Upsells are so huge because we think about, oh, you know, I know people like will do or a Facebook post where they're like, tell me what you charge and what you offer or whatever. And then people are like, I charge this much. And we get really caught up, and it does sound sexy, you know, like this amount. And obviously, like to be making a minimum amount, it's great. But I totally do that where I like strip back my package, where all they get for like my starting package is 7 hours, and all they get is me for 7 hours, and they get the edited digital files with that. But afterward, so I pre-sell that package that's paid for in advance, that money is like spent and forgotten about. And then afterward, that's when I'm upselling them on anything print related. So that like in your case, that's selling them the ceremony, the other things. And so in the end, I might start with a $3,000 package, but I might end up with like a $5,000 plus package because they've purchased two separate things, and you know, both are valuable to them, but we just can't get too caught up in what it all is like right when we sell it, because there's so many opportunities for upsells. And the same thing, I know you said you were talking about like the family videos, and not that when we talked earlier about the family videos that you did and that you didn't do it, but with family photos and things like that, there's also a lot of opportunities for upsells, even with digital files, like offering a set number and then going up. So with weddings, I think we need to I personally think we need to offer all the digital files for weddings and find other upsells, but there are always opportunities to get creative. And so do you offer set packages, like three set packages, or do you do everything a la carte?
For a long time I did the three set packages, and I would say 6 to 9 months ago, I switched to a base package and then everything else is an add on. Yeah. So what I currently offer, I decided that, I want full control over as much as I can get for a wedding day. And so I actually offer quote unquote unlimited coverage. So that doesn't mean that I show up at 6 a.m. and leave at midnight. I will look at your timeline and I will determine the ideal time for me to arrive and for me to depart in order to deliver what you want. I didn't like being tied down to a specific start and end time, because if it meant I didn't get to do the sparkler exit, or they felt pressure to pay for an extra hour, in the moment, I just didn't really care for that model personally. I know a lot of people totally don't want to leave money on the table, but that's not really what I value. I value flexibility. And so I offer unlimited coverage. I do offer a second shooter with my packages, just because I don't want to be doing it alone anymore. It's a lot of gear. And then just the highlight film. So I don't even really get specific with how long it is. I say it's 4 to 6 minutes ish, but then usually I'll deliver 7, because I just want full control over all of the creative part. And then ceremony, toasts, a doc edit, or same day edit, any of those things are available at a later date. And I have found that it has given my couples some breathing room. They're booking all of their vendors at the same time, and they only have so much money in their bank account, to start with. And so I think they're looking at those numbers, and getting overwhelmed, but knowing that, after the wedding, they can add something on, I think is really encouraging to them. That, and they don't even, consider it as, a part of what they paid. I think they see it as, a separate cost. And yes. So I think that benefits us. They don't see, oh, I spent $4,000 on wedding photography. They see, I spent $3,000. And then later, I bought $1,000 worth of products. So I think that is a mental game for them that really can work in our favor.
Yeah. And that's exactly why, like you, I don't offer set packages. And I know there's a psychology to it and driving people to the middle package and whatnot, but I think everybody should be custom. Everybody needs different things. And I also, I will not allow people to get an album before the wedding. It's not even allowed to be in your package. I say, wait till you see your photos and then you can decide what you want. And then they can get that later. So there are a variety of ways to raise our prices. It's not just about saying, hey, I'm going to throw an extra $100 on my base cost, which we should be doing. That is a part of it. But we can also get creative in the ways that we're offering upsells and extra things, and also cutting our own costs so that we're not spending as much. You talked about having the second videographer, and having, for me, the second photographer, which is now an add-on. I actually have an a la carte cost that they spend on the second photographer. And I used to have them pay only what I was paying the photographer, and now I was there's a lot of extra work for me, so now they pay extra because I have to then call that and do all the extra stuff that comes with it. The other thing that I do just to kind of help with the psychology of it is, if they spend a certain amount, they get bonuses. So if they spend $3,800 for me, they get a bonus 1 hour, either hour of coverage or hour engagement session that comes along with it. So it just gives them incentive to add on that coverage that they actually need, or add on product credit or whatever that looks like. So I found that that's a nice way to, you're not necessarily even raising prices, you're just incentivizing that they add on more time, more whatever it might be to get what they need. And I'm not pushing it. You know, I don't ever push anything. I just sit down with them and I talk about the day and what they need and hours that they need. And I actually genuinely recommend what I think that they need. And if I don't think they need that, I'm not going to recommend it. So I think that's part of it too, is really servicing your client and not just pushing them to buy something because you want the money, but giving them a recommendation based on what you truly think that they need.
Totally. And I think that there's so many other ways we can offer value beyond like what we do on a wedding day and what we deliver. And I kind of like to advise other professionals to like find different ways that you can offer value. And I think one of the biggest ways is like making them feel loved and just valued, like not just like a number on your spreadsheet or like a blacked out date in their calendar. Like you, like the couple matters, like they truly matter. And if you make them feel like royalty, like I think that alone, like warrants a price increase, like just making them feel fantastic. And the great thing is that like the wedding, like industry is a referral based industry. Like we thrive on referrals, and like that is going to get them talking to like their wedding party. They're all probably like in the same age range and they're going to be getting engaged, and it's just going to get them talking like you up really. And it's free marketing, and it, yeah, I think it's a great idea.
What are some things that you do that, to make them feel just loved and appreciated?
Yeah. So I really like to, I don't know if it's like this for you, but usually they just book me over email and then we'll connect like in person later. So I like to meet with them for coffee, and it's usually in the evenings. And so I try to make them feel really comfortable. And so I'll have like a scone or like a cookie, like already like on the table waiting for them, because I found that if they arrive at a meeting and I ask them, do you want anything? Like, even if it's my treat, they're going to say no.
Yeah.
So I don't really want them to have the option to say no. I just want to be like, here's something amazing, like eat it. And then I try to just like be as friendly and helpful as possible. Like I'll refer them to whatever they need, you know, hair, makeup, whatever. I think I have a unique perk being a female videographer, because there's not that many of us, at least in my area. So, but most photographers are, I have found. So you guys can use this. It's just like being the bride's best friend, just like talking her up, making her feel amazing. And then like the groom just kind of like rides along with that and like sees that like you're making her feel amazing. And so, just offering whatever you can, like in advice and like feel good emotions, and just being really friendly, making it less of a business transaction. And then that will reflect like really well on the wedding day too. If you can arrive to the wedding and like give her a big hug and like ask how she's doing and like look into her eyes and be like, how are you doing? You know, or how are you feeling? Instead of just like, hello, it is nice to see you again. Like that robotic like thing. So yeah, I think just being personable.
I've always said I know that I've done my job when I walk into the room where they're getting ready and I get a hug, or if they're like in the middle of makeup, they at least, they refer to me as my name. They say, hey, everybody, Allie's here, instead of the photographer's here. And I found the more that I charge, the more people do that. And it's a little bit of them valuing me, and it's a lot of also me valuing them. And so whether I do work with a lot of out of town people, but if we've taken the time to like build that relationship and the whole wedding party calls me Allie and I try to learn their names and call them by their names, that's meaningful. So if I walk in and everyone's calling me the photographer, I'm like, oh, I failed. Like, you just see me as the photographer. But if I walk in and they're like, hey, Allie, like, it's so good to see you, then I know that I'm a person. I'm there because, like, they care about me as a person. I care about them as a person. So I think that's my little, like, it's like my wind vane for how I know that I've done it right.
Yeah, I love that. And then you can gauge and you'd be like, well, what did I do differently with this couple that I need to change for the next time? Yeah, I think that just making a purchase is such an emotional thing. And whether or not they're going to refer you is such an emotional thing too. And so just like playing to those emotions is key. Yeah. There's so much more nuance to being in this sort of business than I think people anticipate.
Absolutely. Okay. As we wrap up, I want people to be able to check your workout, your podcast out. So why don't you share with everybody where they can find you, both your wedding film business and also the podcast that you run?
Yeah, thanks. I'm most active on Instagram. And so you can find my wedding film studio at Fleeting Moments Cinema. And then my podcast is called Level Up Your Wedding Film Business. And the Instagram handle for that is The Level Up Co. It's a little shorter because the podcast name is so long.
All right, cool. Well, if you missed that, you can find the show notes either in the notes on iTunes, or you can go to photofieldnotes.com and get those links and check Taylor out. Taylor, thanks for sharing your story, sharing your thoughts. Always just like great to connect with people who have great stories to tell and great tips to give.
Awesome. It was super fun. Thanks, Allie.
Thanks for listening. Check out show notes at photofieldnotes.com. And if you loved this episode, leave your review on iTunes. See you next week.